Hello, everybody. Today, we're talking about fostering. And fostering is really the alchemy of love and care that turns forgotten corners into homes and strangers in the family. That's what we're going to be talking about today. I would like to welcome Madison Kopta, a transformative voice in the foster care narrative. Her debut novel, Watched in the Woods, earned acclaim for its authentic look into the foster care challenges. But Madison's expertise doesn't stop at fiction. Having both lived through and fostered within the system, she offers invaluable insights to prospective caregivers. Beyond storytelling, Madison empowers the next generation of authors, teaching them how to write and publish their own novels. In Madison, we find a unique blend of lived experience and creative mentorship, rewriting destinies one story at a time. This is going to be an amazing interview, and I cannot wait to get more. So, in other words, here we go. Madison, I am so happy to have you here today.
So, thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Let's start this out right. Who do you want to do a shout out to? Let's start there.
Yeah, I would love to shout out my dad, Scott Stanger, for watching the kids while I wrote the book and, oh, other side, creating the map that's going to be in the book. He drew that by hand.
That is amazing. I love maps and books, by the way. Like, when I'm reading things like Tolkien or something, it's like, they're in this place, and I look at the map, and I'm like, okay, there we are.
Yep.
We are going to talk about fostering, the foster care system, and your experience with it. So let's start. Like, what encapsulates, you know, what, share your story that encapsulates the fostering and how it truly feels, and your, like, what are your raw, unfiltered moments and emotions that you think people hear about and you want to share as far as fostering goes?
Yeah. You know, there are times when it's just so hard and it just weighs on your heart so much. But it's just, in the end, it's worth it. You get to see kids starting to thrive, especially, you know, as they come into these stable homes and their souls can rest and you can see that happening. It's just the most worthwhile, wonderful things you can do.
You know, I think I want to back up even a little bit further, because before I understood a little bit more about fostering, I didn't understand the difference between fostering and adopting. So clear that up for us. What's the difference between those two?
Sure. So fostering, you can adopt a foster child, but fostering in and of itself are kids who, you know, just can't stay with their family or caregivers for whatever reason, and they just need a place to stay for a few weeks or years sometimes, and while that gets sorted out and they find a safe place where they can stay. So they're not necessarily up for adoption or emancipated from their parents. Sometimes, you know, mom and dad or whoever are just working through something and they need a safe place for the kids to be while their home is becoming a safe place for them to go back to.
Okay. So now you said something that just caught my ear right away. And you said it could be for a few weeks or it could be for years. Mm-hmm. I cannot even imagine the emotional roller coaster for someone who fosters, for someone for a few weeks and you get attached. Talk about that. That's.
Yeah. So for us, personally, we did get so attached. We always get attached. And I think the kids in foster care, as hard as it is for you, they need you to get attached and they need adults. And sometimes mom and dad, grandparents, whoever, they have family members who are attached, but they need people who they know are just crazy about them and attached. And it breaks your heart when they go back home, but they need to feel like there's someone who's willing to have their heart broken for them, okay, for the betterment of their life, I think.
Now, I know that you have two kids that you fostered and then finally adopted. Did you foster some kids before them and weren't able to adopt them?
Yes. We've fostered kids prior to them. We've even fostered kids who, you know, we felt like weren't right for our family and they've moved on. We've kind of been in all kinds of situations. We've even submitted our little family profile to be placed with kids and we weren't chosen. Another family was chosen. So we've really seen all sides of the story for foster care.
What did you get into it? What's that? Like, why did you start fostering? What made you do that?
So, I've always wanted to foster since high school. That I had a friend whose parents fostered and they fostered these teenage girls and they were so cool. And at one point they had a baby. And every time we went over, there was just all these people around. And it was so, I know now being the adult and parent in the situation, it was not fun all the time, but going into it, I thought it was just so fun all the time. And they just got to have these sleepovers and that always stayed with me. It was a very early exposure. And then I decided as an adult, my husband and I had our two biological girls. We wanted to continue to expand the family, but I was set on expanding it in the non-traditional way in fostering children.
Now from the children's point of view, from the kids' point of view, everyone knows the story of like Oliver Twist and you see the Oliver Twist story and the adoptions. What is it like now for the kids in the foster system? Are they in homes? Are they in one big home? I don't know these things. What, tell us about that too.
So I know that now there can be group homes, but those are set aside primarily for older children. But there really aren't orphanages anymore, at least in the United States. Any child who is emancipated or, you know, is not able to live with their home in their home with their family, they go to a foster home. So instead of orphanages, we foster families.
Mm-hmm. And how do kids get into the foster system?
So from my understanding, you know, teachers, anyone who works with children becomes a mandated reporter, and foster parents are mandated reporters, which means if you feel like there might be some form of abuse or you're told something by a child, you contact the authorities, like non-emergency. At this point, because we have fostered, I'd have contacts and would just contact CPS and, then they would do an investigation. Yes. And do an investigation, check on the home and just make sure everything's okay.
Okay. And then what sort of things cause or the child to get into the foster program from home?
That would typically be that the parent or caretaker might be struggling with something and just isn't able to provide a stable, safe home environment for the child.
Mm-hmm. Is it something that the parent has to agree to or not to have the children put into foster care system?
No, the parent can, but no, it's typically against their will.
Gotcha. So how do you think like fostering's changed over like the years? Has it gotten to be more acceptable? Has it gotten to be safer? Has it gotten to be, what's changed over the years about fostering?
I think a really positive change that's come about is the internet and social media, and it's allowed for people like this, where we can come out and talk about it and talk about our experiences. I think it's made it less scary. I was told by some women I was approached when we were talking about fostering and really excited. This is before we fostered. And I was told that we shouldn't foster older kids, especially older boys, because they would rape our younger children. And I think that's a very common thought. But I think with situations like this, the internet, I'm able to talk about it, and it really demystifies a lot of it, because at the end of the day, they're just kids and they need a home. And so I think that's a really positive change that's come about, because it's simply not true. And I think this demystifying foster kids is such a positive change and allows people to see them as kids.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. What do the parents, the people that want to adopt or foster kids, have to be prepared for that maybe they don't know?
So it starts off really nice with the kids. At least that's been my experience, where the first few weeks to a few months, the kids are amazing and so well behaved during this honeymoon period, especially if they like you and they want to stay, they want to put their best foot forward. But as they get comfortable, that's going to fall apart. They're going to start, processing what happened, and these behaviors are going to come out. And even still, we see behaviors with our kids that have been with us for almost 4 years, come out, and it's this process because they're comfortable with you. And it really is a positive thing that they're in a safe space to where they can truly process and fall apart and feel those feelings and move through it and heal. But the healing is messy and hard, but it's very positive. And I think when foster parents get to that point, it really is something to internally celebrate and say, okay, we've created a safe space and our children can process.
When you first meet the kids, do you introduce yourself as, I am your mom, or do you use your first name, or do you say, I'm going to be with you just for this long? What's that like?
So my husband and I kind of talked about this before we are placed. So actually our adopted foster children don't call us mom and dad. They call us Maddie and Sam. And they refer to us to their friends like, oh, that's my mom. But when they talk to us, it's like, hey, Maddie, or hey, Sam. And that really started at the beginning when we were placed with them, which is this, I give them the same talk I always give a kid, which is, you can call me mom. You can say I'm your aunt. You can call me Maddie. You can say I'm a family friend. I really leave it open to them. But I am always sure to say, like, I would love it if you called me mom, or, if you felt comfortable with that, or I would love it if you did that. I feel like it's important for the parent to really take the first step and, say the first, I love you, and which we do pretty much immediately. We don't really differentiate between our bio kids and the foster kids. We want them to just feel as assimilated as possible. But our now adopted kids, when they came with us, they knew dad and they knew their bio mom, and they were mom and dad. And so we were Maddie and Sam, and, that's still what it is today, but that doesn't make them, any less my kids. They just, it's just not traditional.
Right. I think that is, I actually think that's beautiful. Like, do you expect one day one will say, hey mom, how are you?
Oh my gosh. She did that one. Our oldest daughter referred to Sam as dad when she was talking to him. This was recently in the car, and both of us froze, and I was so jealous. But it was magical.
And did she realize that she had said dad, or did she do it on purpose, or was it like, hey dad, instead of like, Sam?
It was, I don't know if she caught on to it. It was very casual. It was like, oh, hey dad, can we blah, blah, blah. And so neither of us like tried to call her on it or anything. It was just normal, because we didn't want to like spook anything. Yes. It hasn't happened since. So I think she realized it, but it was exciting.
It's exciting for me, and I'm just listening to you say it. It's like, that's amazing. All right. Well, we're going to keep like hoping for more moms and dads to pop out randomly. Yes. Oh my gosh. You're like amazing. You've also written a book about this experience. And what's the book about, and how did you come up with doing it? Because that is beautiful.
Yes. So Watched in the Woods. I'd always wanted to write a book, and just being a writer at the time by profession, I'd wanted to write a book, and we had these foster kids, and they were starting to go to the school that I went to, this junior high, and starting to make these friends where I had made friends at this school that are still my friends to this day. And they started going to these science camps and dances, all these experiences that I had in this very profound time in my life. And I just wanted to write a book about it and marry the two, but have it come from the perspective from a foster kid. Because one, I think a lot of kids, even if they aren't foster or whatever, all kids feel like they're going through something major when they're in middle school and feel like, you know, it's them against the world. That's such a interesting time. And I think being a voice for foster kids, because there's tons of foster kids in middle school, but I felt like really it's something everyone can identify with, where, you know, you feel like no one understands you. So I wrote it from the perspective of Maya Quinn, who is this foster girl. She's going to a new school, doesn't have friends. And she is going to go to science camp, which the school that I went to, this junior high, they go to science camp at that grade. And she meets these three friends who are her really good friends throughout. And they sneak out of their cabin one night, because that's exactly what me and my friends would have done, which I've had to sidebar for my daughter and say, you know, you... this is not me giving you permission to sneak out, but that's what they do in the book. And
it's what every kid does.
Right.
You have to.
And there's this haunted mine, because up here in Northern California, we've got a very pervasive, like, old gold mining culture. There's a lot of that history where we are. So at the science camp, which is real, there's this old mine that was haunted. And so in the book, it's not haunted by ghosts, but there is a Bigfoot that they come across, which was also very pervasive and very big. It's a big deal here. And even our grocery store, there's a big painting of Bigfoot. So they find Bigfoot. And then, of course, the parents and the adults find out, which ruins everything. So they have to help and save Bigfoot. And really, she's going through this scary time in her personal life. She's navigating the foster care system, which of course is totally different from anything that happened in my actual foster kids' lives. It's totally fictional, but she's going through these scary situations, and it's mirrored in this monster in the woods. And not only does she overcome this, you know, situation that she's working through and living through, she overcomes it, because she can overcome it, and the monster is not so scary. And that's really how it all ties in. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. So
can you read us a little bit of the book? I would love to hear the tone of it and understand a little bit of it and understand your writing style and all that kind of cool stuff.
Yes. Yeah. I would love to have a little blurb up. And this is right when they first get to the science camp. All the kids get off the smelly bus into the fresh mountain air. I'm sure my new camp t-shirt now smells like sweaty gym socks. Tara hops down close behind me and we link arms. I've never had a friend like Tara before. Then again, I've never had my own bed before I was placed with the Knights either. Tara's arm is warm in the sun and a joyful emotion settles into my chest. Margo and Gemma are close behind and the four of us begin to run towards the mess hall to meet our counselor for the week. Charlotte yells after us, but none of us look back. Is it mean to leave Charlotte behind? But the wind whipping through my hair as I run is too wonderful to stop. So we continue across the field at full speed.
Oh, I'm trying to, I was just trying to think, should we go back? Should we wait? No, we keep running. It's like, yeah. That is awesome. That's nicely read and written. Thank you.
Thank you.
What is the age range for the book? Is it YA? Is it younger, older?
Yeah, it's middle grade. So about 8 to 12 years old.
Okay. 8 to 12.
And Maya is 11.
Okay. It's meant to be read by the 8 to 12 year old person. It's not like, you know, parents reading. Is it good for parents to read too?
Will they parents learn something? Can read it. It's a really quick read. It's about 12,000 to 13,000 words. So it's short. I really wanted to model it after a Goosebumps novel because it's, you know, there's that junk food aspect where, yes, there's a big story, there's character development, but at the, you know, they find Bigfoot. There's a lot of just fun stuff about it where you can just read it and you don't necessarily learn anything. It's just a good read. Quick. Yeah.
You also teach people how to write, right? So did you do that before? Or is this something that you started doing since you've written this book?
This is something I've started doing since I wrote the book, Watched in the Woods. I have a few other kids' books in production, but those are very, very young rhyming stories. And I started getting asked, you know, how do you get to that point? How did you write the book, then get it published? And so I started doing a class. I did it live here locally. And now I offer it online where it really just guides people through the writing of the book. And I used my own little roadmap that I made. Mm-hmm. So they've got the amount of words to write so they can get the book done in a certain amount of time. That was important for me because I was on a little timeline with my potential publishers and just me as a person. I didn't want to get bored and get distracted. So I gave myself a really tight timeline. So people get that. And on top of that, I talk about how I really marketed my story and how it connected with the story Watched in the Woods and how that made it, I think, more interesting for publishers to want to pick up. There's just more meat to it there. And I think everyone has that. Everyone has their own story and it's going to show up in your book, whether you mean to have it show up in your book or not. So really, I talk to people a lot about marrying the two and how to market and sell your book to publishers.
I think that's amazing. I mean, you came up with this whole, you fostered, you wrote a book, you're raising children, you've got everything going on here. And I see it kind of circling around like who you are as, you know, as a great person, as a nice person, and the fostering. It's amazing.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, I love talking with you. If you were to come up with like, just let's say three things, and there's people who want to foster, and it was like, here are the three things that I think you need to know before you foster, what would those things be?
So the first one I would say is that the first 2 weeks are suffocating. Every time for me, the first 2 weeks, you've got this new energy, this new schedule. Everything's new, not just for the kids, which it's important to think about how the kids are transitioning. But something I never considered was how big of a transition it is for you and how taxing it is for you. And all of a sudden, you have to watch a movie at night when usually you'd be reading a book and going to bed. Your whole schedule changes. But after about 2 weeks, you get used to it. Things settle. Both you and the child are not as nervous. So the first 2 weeks, power through. I hyperventilated a lot. It gets better. It truly gets better. And I think the second thing is sometimes there are going to be really scary behaviors that you see. For example, we had a placement once who, after he'd been with us for a few weeks, he started drawing as an outlet. His therapist told him to draw. And he drew a picture of me hanging myself, which I saw it and I was like, what? Oh my goodness, that's, what is this? But in talking to the therapist, you know, we had the therapist come in and we sorted it. And I spoke with him about, you know, just to check in and, you know, it seems really scary on the outside, and it is, and they're going through such a scary thing or in a scary place, mm-hmm. but it's really a way for them to process. You know, they go through these really scary behaviors. It just means they're one step closer to healing and moving through it. And that just knowing scary behaviors are coming, and don't panic, but try and meet your kid where they're at, because usually it's a process. Right. They're moving through and healing. And the last one, this was actually advice that a veteran foster parent told me when we were starting to foster, and that's do pizza and a movie on the first night. Just pizza and a movie. That way the kids don't have to talk.
Yeah.
Pizza's easy, just really low key. If they could walk, they can, but if they want to just zone out and not worry about it, there's a movie, and just make it as easy as possible.
I love those tips. Absolutely. That's phenomenal. And now pizza. I'm even thinking about eating some pizza right now myself. So that's an extra brilliant tip. Thank you so much. I want to play a game with you. I want to learn more about you. We're going to do something that I do with just about everybody. It's called This or That. I'm going to ask you a question. I'll give you two choices. You can choose one or the other, but not neither or both. So if you have to explain yourself, we might be able to do that too. So, I'm just going to give you the categories and you tell me what you want to do. Okay. Bedtime stories or morning talks?
Morning talks.
Okay. Board games or outdoor activities?
Outdoor activities.
Okay. How about parent-teacher meetings or school plays?
School plays.
Yeah. By the way, have you ever been in a school play yourself?
Oh, yes. A lot.
Oh, yeah? What was your favorite? That was my jam.
Cinderella.
Cinderella?
Yes.
Yeah. Which part did you play?
Cinderella.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Did you do the musical version?
Yes, we did Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Okay. Very nice. Let me see. Baby steps or giant leaps?
Giant leaps.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Family movies or family cookouts?
Cookouts.
Okay. So we'll get a little bit tougher now. How about scheduled routine or spontaneous adventure?
Scheduled routine.
Really? How much of a difference does that make, you think, in the whole family setup and situation?
A lot. A lot. We went on a trip recently and I had things scheduled down to the minute because it's a lot of people to get around.
Well, you got four kids plus two of you. There's six people. That's a whole band.
Yeah, we were on schedule.
Excellent. How about listening ears or giving advice?
Listening ears.
Okay. Small family celebrations or big family reunions?
Big family reunions.
Really? And how does when you have the big family reunions, have you found that like everybody is accepting of all the kids and the fosters especially?
Oh yeah. That's always been very positive. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. How about traditional parenting style or modern techniques?
Oh man.
Right. You can think about it. You can even justify your choice.
I think modern techniques, like if I had to choose one, I would choose modern techniques.
Okay.
But we're pretty traditional. We're traditional with a twist.
Really? What's the twist that makes it hard for you? We haven't gotten to the hard ones yet.
Oh gosh. I think with modern techniques, you know, you think of gentle parenting. And I think that's such a beautiful concept, I think. And I just think of all the times that I mess up and my kids are always so easy and forgiving on me that I want to be easy and forgiving to them. Of course, it's important to have consequences for negative actions, and that's how we grow and learn. So it's hard to have one without the other, I think. But that was my mind. That's what I was thinking.
Okay, gotcha. How about adopting locally or internationally?
For me personally, I'm all about adopting locally, obviously. But both are beautiful. Beautiful things come from both.
I absolutely agree with that. I mean, it's the love that you're giving that is so important, okay. I think. What about in terms of adoption, open adoption or closed adoption?
Open adoption, but it is situational.
Yeah. Explain those for people that don't know the difference between a closed and open adoption.
So at least in California, all adoptions are, quote, closed adoption, which just gives the parents, the new adoptive parents, the ability to have the relationships in the children's lives that are healthy for the children. But I think that having being able to have their biological family in the picture as much as is healthy and as much as everyone wants to be in the picture, I think that's really good for the kids to know and see their family and have a sense of identity in who they are. And two, even just for health reasons, having someone they can contact, you know, a grandmother, an aunt, and say, hey, like, does this run in my family?
Right.
What's my
kidney transplant?
Exactly.
Right.
So you try to keep it open.
Gotcha. Yeah. I've seen both with friends of mine, and there's definitely, that's a thing you got to navigate, you know?
It's hard.
Let's try, how about permanent adoption or long-term fostering?
So I like permanent adoption. Mm-hmm. I think it gives the kids a sense of stability in knowing whether or not they like it, you know, hey, like, I'm your parent.
Yeah.
There's nothing we can do about it. But some kids, you know, when they're older, our oldest that we were able to adopt, he had the option to just do long-term fostering, which he didn't want to do, thankfully. But I know there are positives to it that I can't put my finger on. And there are reasons to do it. Mm-hmm. Definitely, I am an adoption person all the way.
Okay. Let's see. Let's talk about some thought-provoking questions. How about changing the system or adapting to it?
I'm going to say adapting to it because my husband always says adapt and overcome. And sometimes you're just going to break yourself against the system trying to change it. But I hope to bring positive changes to it one day. Gotcha. Without breaking myself.
What are some of the changes you would like to say? Just maybe one or two.
You know, it's hard because I think everyone who's in this, it's hard. I don't think the system is broken because anyone wants it to be broken. I think people who are in the foster care system, you know, social workers, therapists, I think everyone's there because we all care about these kids who don't have a voice. But, and I don't even feel like I can say, wish there was more advocacy, because I think there are so many programs to advocate for these kids, and it's so tough because it is just a tough situation. And there's, you know, not a lot of ways around it. But I would love to see a change in that. There was a time where we felt like we were done fostering, at least for now, focus on the four kids we have. Our quiver was full. Well, my husband's was, which I felt like was respectable. He has four kids and he feels like he's done and I can get by. He did his part. But I was going to be a CASA, and there really is, which is, you're not a foster parent, but you work with foster kids mm-hmm. and you advocate for them in court. And that's a CASA worker. but there really is this kind of the system against foster parents. And I wish to change that because I think we're all on the same team. At least most people are. And it's really just, we want these kids to do good and be well and succeed. And so I would love to have a little more unity, which might even just help the system all together. No one is against anyone. We're all trying to do the best thing for the kids.
Okay. Let me ask you this then. So about focus on rights of the child or rights of the biological parents?
Rights of the child.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And then how about unconditional love or tough love?
Unconditional love, but I think they go hand in hand sometimes.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Are you an unconditional love or a tough love mom?
I feel like I'm an unconditional love mom until there's something that they do that I still love them, of course, but there's something that I do. I'm like, we just talked about this. They just said not to do it.
Can I just tell you, you just scared me there. I was like, I hear my mom talking. Oh. Like, yep, mom. You totally just whipped me into shape right there. I'm okay, good. I got it, mom. Okay, so you've got that down. I love it.
Thank you.
How about personal growth or sacrifice? We'll make that the last one. That's your tough one.
Sacrifice, if we're just talking about me personally, I would rather sacrifice than personal growth because I want my kids to grow. So I would rather sacrifice.
Gotcha. I think this has been an amazing conversation, and I wish the whole world could be more giving like you, because I can't imagine if people would think about other people like you do and how much better this world would be, in a better place.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
We're going to make sure other people stay in touch with you also. You got your website, madisoncopta.com. And for everyone that's listening instead of watching, it's Madison, M-A-D-I-S-O-N, Copta, K-O-P-T-A, madisoncopta.com. And then you also have your Instagram at Madison Copta. And so people need to definitely check that out. I love what you're doing.
Thank you.
You're just amazing. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So everybody wants to see more about Madison. We're going to have Madison probably in the newsletter, definitely on some social. You can find out more at afunnywayoflooking.com. You can re-watch the episodes there. And today, by the way, for everyone that's watching, we have just launched our new newsletter. To sign up for it and learn about it, find out more about Madison, you can go to afunnywayoflooking.news, N-E-W-S, and find out all kinds of fun things and amazing things there. So this has been amazing. I can't wait to learn more. I want to find out more. And you did scare the crap out of me, by the way, when you did your mom voice. You totally did. I'm like, okay, I'm in line now. All right.
I'm so sorry. There's my parenting style right there.
Yes, exactly. All right, everybody. Thank you very much. Madison, we will see you again in the future. Bye,
everybody. Thank you so much. See you later.